91.5 to... Someday, a friend may offer you a chance to visit the other side of a dream. Your ticket is a little packet of white powder called heroin. But every packet of heroin is different. You don't know what's getting into you. Some doses are so strong, they kill. Heroin is so vicious that the criminals who make the big money on heroin don't use it. They know a lot of reasons why heroin is very, very popular. That's why they call it dope.
There's a price tag on almost everything. Whether you drive a shiny new 1952 model or a pre-war jalopy, you had to pay the price. And when you're driving that car, remember that speed also has its price. The price tag on speed violations last year was 15,000 killed and 500,000 injured. This year, thousands of lives can be saved if you and millions of other motorists come to the sober realization that speed is the biggest killer on the highways and resolve to slow down before you or someone else pays the price that must be paid for it. You can do your part by keeping within speed limits. At all times, drive as though your life depends on it. It does.
Transmission will start in 5 seconds from now. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, in.
The Durango 95 purred away real horror show. A nice, warm, vibratory feeling all through your gutty woods. Soon it was trees and dark, my brothers. With real country dark.
No, no, don't do that. If you shoot him, you'll just make him mad.
You want to die out here, huh? Well, then die.
I tell you what, I'm not going to die.
No, sorry.
I'm not going to die. No, I'm going to kill the bear. Say it, I'm going to kill the bear. Say it, I'm going to kill the bear. Say it. Say I'm going to kill the bear. Say it!
I'm gonna kill the bear.
Say it again!
I'm gonna kill the bear.
And again! I'm gonna kill the bear! Good. What one man can do, another can do.
What one man can do, another can do.
Say it again!
What one man can do, another can do.
And again!
What one man can do, another can do!
Yeah. You're goddamn right.
Time to pay the fiddler. Every damn night.
And it's the fuckers out there. Is there anybody hiding there in the dark?
Mouth to mouth, wherever you are.
I'll rip out your eyes and piss on your brain.
Now, Mr. Evil.
Dr. Evil. I didn't spend 6 years in evil medical school to be called Mr. Thank you very much.
Are you lost, sweetheart? Are you afraid, honey?
I'll get you, my pretty.
Can't just go around doing whatever you feel like. You can't. There are rules in life.
There happens to be a lot about me that you don't know, Mr. Smarty Man.
You gonna do something or just stand there and bleed?
You're doing it or watching it. I used to feel real on a show.
Let's keep on looking for the light. Oh, can't you see the morning after? It's waiting right outside the storm. Why don't we cross the bridge together and find the place that's safe and warm? It's not too late. We should
seems to be piling up in those shallows. By the way, Happy New Year.
Well, thank you, sir. Same to you.
What's its speed?
60 knots, sir.
It must be mountainous. Can you make out anything?
Nothing, sir.
We have a radar target in the port bow. Keep a sharp watch.
Yes, sir.
Get my binoculars.
Captain? Look out.
What is it, lookout?
On the port bow. I don't know. I never saw anything like it. An enormous wall of water coming towards us.
Oh, my God.
Hard left!
Hard left, sir.
Close all watertight doors. Sound both stations.
Welcome to Real Horror Show at episode 8. I'm going to do disaster movies this week. That was a clip from the Poseidon Adventure from 1972. Leslie Nielsen in there is Captain Harrison. It's kind of funny to hear him in the serious roles. We know him from Naked Gun and from Airplane, of course, in our later years.
And especially since he went on to do parodies of those very same movies.
That's right. Yeah, and Airplane itself, a parody of a disaster movie.
Yep.
What was it? I think it was called Ground Zero or something like that. An old black and white movie that's almost shot for shot in dialogue the same as Airplane. It's kind of interesting. They lifted a lot of the same scenarios and the same dialogue and used it in Airplane. So I thought, all right, so horror, disasters are horror. A lot, and the reason I thought of this week is because we've been having this unusually warm weather. And although we are enjoying this unusually warm weather, it's back to cool again today.
Yeah.
We're about 30 degrees less than we were in the last 2 days.
Yeah.
But, something's going on with the weather. Something's going on. I don't need Greta Thunberg to yell at me. The air conditioner stayed on into November here in New England, and that's different.
I haven't had my air conditioner on since sometime in September, I don't think.
Really?
So,
how about
a
fan?
We've had the fan on a couple of nights.
Well, you know I like to run hot, too.
Yeah.
I'm a big man. I run hot.
Yeah.
So,
it's been a warm autumn. Last time this happened was 1987.
Mm-hmm.
And every now and again, we get one of these.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm more concerned about the drought than I am about the general warmth, because the warmth is somewhat pleasant. The drought is a potential long-term problem.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So there's all kinds of disasters that we can talk about today.
Yeah, you know who could have used a drought? The people on the Poseidon.
on the Poseidon Adventure.
That didn't end well for them.
Yeah, this one from 1972. A lot of great Oscar winners in this one, too. It was Gene Hackman was in it. Ernest Borgnine shows up in it. Jack Albertson was from, he was Charlie's uncle in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Shelley Winters is in it. The big Shelley Winters, not the little Shelley Winters. Right? Oh, no, that's Shelley Duvall.
That's Shelley
Duvall. The one that went the crazy. This is big, fat Shelley Winters.
Yeah.
And Red Buttons. Who can forget Red Buttons? who was a big actor in his own right.
Taking time out from his endless appearances on 1970s variety specials.
That's right.
To show up in the Poseidon Adventure.
And he was also in Pete's Dragon, of course.
Yes, he was.
So in this one, a tsunami or a tidal wave takes over this old it opens up as it's this last adventure for the Poseidon, which is an old boat that shouldn't be going across the water, but it is. And they say go full speed ahead so you don't take on water. And then a tidal wave or a tsunami comes in and takes them down. And the rest of the movie, is about the ship sinking.
It's about them trying to get off the ship. Gene Hackman is the leader of the band of survivors trying to get off the ship, and it. Of all the disaster movies, the Poseidon Adventure is probably the template.
Yeah.
Like, Airport was the first of the big disaster movies, came out in 1970.
70, I think, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and it's basically like bomb goes off on a plane, they got to figure out how to land the plane.
Yes.
If you've seen Airplane, you've seen Airport.
Yeah, Airport's a great movie, and that used to be something they played on HBO all the time, when HBO was only on for about 4 hours in the afternoon. We were one of the first houses that had HBO, and Airport, I think, 75, and Airport, the Concorde with George Kennedy, those were always on HBO. They always played those disaster movies.
Those movies were also very, very big in the early days of VHS, the early days of the RCA Selectivision, and the early days of Laserdisc.
Yeah.
Like, for whatever reason, everybody was waiting for Airport to come out.
Yeah.
And then they'd go buy the player and get Airport and watch it again.
Right, right. So nowadays, you can't even get an air disaster movie. I think the latest thing that we got was probably the one with the President, Air Force One. Was it Harrison Ford, right?
Oh, there must have been something since then.
There was also the one with, Clint Eastwood didn't he do the one about the French... that was the train. Those were the guys on the train.
Yeah, those are the guys on the train.
But I thought there was a hijacked airport or a hijacked airplane sequence in a movie recently, at least in the last 5 years, not many.
There was the scene in Casino Royale where they were blowing up they were trying to blow up the prototype of the new aircraft.
The Bond. Yeah, that's about 2005, though, isn't it? Casino Royale. Yeah.
And Le Chiffre had... had shorted the stock of that airline, expecting the disaster.
Yes,
because he had already lost all of his drug money because of James Bond, and then James Bond stopped that, and so he had to play the poker game. That's the setup for that whole thing.
Yeah,
but now that you mention it, I think the last time that I saw an airplane hijacked was probably The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, at the very beginning,
the opening sequence, Bane hijacks the plane.
Yeah. It's a passenger plane, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or is it a full... Yeah.
And the airport movies, like, devolved. You know, the first one is good. The second one is good. After that, they start getting silly. They had the one on the Concorde.
As soon as Airplane came out, it was basically... airline disaster movies were all done.
Yeah.
Because they've been spoofed.
Yeah. And Airplane came along and just kind of put the final nail in that coffin and actually... killed off all disaster movies
for
a little while.
Yeah, pretty much killed off all the disaster movies in a little while. Yeah, you're right.
But the 1970s, part of the thing was, in the 1970s, air disasters happened, significant ones, 3 or 4 times a year.
Well, you had the Olympics, right? Munich with the...
I'm just talking about like planes crashing on takeoff, planes crashing on landing.
Yes.
You had the two planes that hit each other at Tenerife. Air disasters were at the front of everybody's mind.
Yeah.
And the airline industry really did not appreciate that Hollywood was taking advantage of this, going out and making movies about airplanes, blowing up and winding up underwater and all the other things that happened in those airport movies.
Yeah.
So they were like, can you please stop making movies where airplanes are the source of the disaster? we'll give you free flights if you'll do that.
Well, here's
Hollywood was like, oh, free air travel. We like that.
I think one of the things you need for, it's almost like a subgenre of a disaster movie. It's like, okay, so are we going to contain people in a certain area?
Yeah.
So you go with the Poseidon Adventure, they're on a boat. You can't get off the boat. You're on a plane. It's got a bomb on it. You can't get off the plane. So therein lies the what would you do if. That would you see this movie if you were one of the passengers on the plane, if you were one of the people on the Poseidon?
Right. And they would never show those movies on airplanes. And
no.
Any movie that has anything to do with an airplane is automatically banned from all in-flight movies.
Mm-hmm.
And for a little while, that was a good source of revenue for Hollywood.
Yeah.
You know, back before they were trying to get everybody to watch on streaming, trying to get everyone to buy physical media, selling those movies to the airlines and selling those movies in a hotel set-top boxes was big business for them.
Yeah.
So when the airlines come along and they're like, we're not showing these movies about airplanes, it was another reason why they backed off from them.
Yeah.
But that was, I mean, it's interesting because in the history of disaster movies, it all sort of goes back to Titanic.
Yeah. Yeah, because the original Titanic, what was it happened one night, right? It was like from the 30s, like 37 or something like that.
There's actually a German film that predates that was made in 1912.
Yeah.
And allegedly the director of the film was executed because the film caused a public scandal.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, It Happened One Night was 1934 pre-code.
It Happened
romantic comedy about the Titanic.
It Happened One Night is the next film that was actually written by the screenplay for it was based on a book written by one of the Titanic survivors.
Mm-hmm.
And he served as a consultant on the film. So in terms of modern cinema, that's generally considered to be like one of the first major disaster movies that was ever made. It's actually a really, really good movie. And if you've seen Titanic, you've seen a lot of it.
Mm.
Because James Cameron pretty much reshot entire sequences from It Happened One Night and dropped them into his movie.
Mm.
They're more advanced. They got CGI and all the rest of that. But there's a video up on YouTube where somebody puts it side by side. They just pull out like that handful of sequences. But if you sit there and watch both films, you realize that It Happened One Night had a profound influence on the script, the pacing, the story, and all the disaster scenes in Titanic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is, of course, the greatest and most honored and most successful disaster movie of all time.
Yeah, Titanic. You got to think that's because they have the Leo and Kate in there. But I love Titanic. When that came out, man, that was a great movie.
I
still love it.
I wasn't going to see Leo and Kate. I was going to see people, you know,
right, bounce off the propeller. That's what got me in.
Yeah, people trying to escape from the ship as it went down. Because to me, that's the most interesting part of the movie.
Yeah,
and that's sort of Titanic kind of inverts the formula a little bit because in the Irwin Allen disaster movies of the 1970s, which are the ones that most people have seen all these movies, Towering Inferno, Poseidon Adventure, Earthquake, Act One is you get to know the characters and you get the rumblings, you know, whatever the disaster is going to be is looming out there in the background. Act One ends with the actual disaster happening.
Yep.
Act two is everybody like surviving or not surviving in the midst of the disaster. And then act three is how do you get to safety?
Mm-hmm.
And the Irwin Allen films always drove their drama out of what happened in act three.
Yeah.
You know, it was the person who's somewhat, you know, detached from everyday life who rises to be a leader.
Yeah.
You know, the elderly couple who don't think they can make it. And, you know, the wife is going to die because she falls off the ladder or she falls off the bridge or she can't fit through whatever they need to fit through.
Yeah.
And so the husband offers to sacrifice himself to stay with her. And she's like, no, go. We have grandchildren, whatever that thing is.
Right, right.
You've got the person who's responsible for it, who's the bad guy.
Yeah.
Who usually dies pretty early on in this. You've got the love interest for the leader, And then you've got some other young couple that's going to fall in love and meet an unfortunate end.
Yes.
Like, all in the moments after the disaster.
Unless, of course, there's Titanic where Kate lives on.
Yeah.
And all she had to do was just, you know, move over just a little bit and let Leo get on the door with her.
Here's a key thing to know if you're ever in a disaster. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at somebody and falling in love, have sex first, then try to escape.
Yeah, he draws her hairy armpit. Doesn't she have like hairy armpits in the movie?
If you try to escape first, you're never having sex.
Yeah.
One of you is going to make it out.
Well, Billy Zane, he gets to have sex and he takes a baby and he gets off the Titanic.
Yeah.
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 He's a villain in that. The villain lives there. He gets off.
That's the rare case where the villain lives.
Yeah, Cameron like redid it a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of people thought that, you know, the captain and the owner and the owner of the White Star Line were the actual villains in that. And there's some truth to that.
Yeah. You know what they needed in these movies, though? The captain needed a Tennille.
No Tennilles.
No Tony Tennilles in any of these Titanic movies.
That's why the disaster happens, because she's not there.
Yeah. Where's Shields and Yarnell when you need them?
We're going to be talking
They're on the love boat.
We're going to be talking about them at some point.
So it says there's quite a few movies about the Titanic. I was thinking of the wrong title. It's Night to Remember is the one I was trying
to
think
Remember.
Of.
Night to Remember, yes.
It Happened One Night is Frank Capra, and that's the one with Clark Gable. It was a romantic comedy.
That's
Night
right.
Night to Remember is the British docudrama that was up for a bunch of awards that was made about the Titanic. It's a
great movie, by the way. Yeah. I highly recommend. I think the whole thing is up on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
If you've never seen it, go watch it. Because especially if you're a Titanic fan, you're going to recognize sequences. You're going to be like, oh, that's in Titanic. Oh, that's in Titanic. It's black and white. But other than that, it feels very much like a modern movie.
Yeah, it does. In the background, I got the Poseidon Adventure original motion picture score. Guess who it's by? Do you know?
John Williams?
It is.
Yeah.
I also have Earthquake, 1974. Guess whose soundtrack that's by?
John Williams.
Yes. And The Towering Inferno, also by John Williams.
Irwin Allen and John Williams met while they were making...
Out?
A little television series known as Lost in Space.
No kidding.
Which was one of Irwin Allen's early credits as a showrunner. And one of John Williams' very early credits as a composer.
Did he the theme song for Lost in Space?
He wrote the theme song.
Wow. Which one, though? There's two of them.
The original one.
Yeah, okay.
Under the name Johnny Williams. He was still Johnny Williams back then.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good for Johnny.
So there's a fun little bit of trivia for you. Yeah, Irwin Allen was the one that brought John Williams into composing for the big screen.
Yeah.
And from there, everybody wanted him.
Huh. And then the rest is history. He's done the best movie soundtracks of all time.
Yeah.
Can't even say arguably. Who else does?
There's no one in his league. There's no one who comes close. Yeah. Who's the other guy that writes all of them? Not Henry Mancini.
Alan Silvestri.
He
does quite a few.
Does a lot. There's somebody else that I'm thinking of.
Danny Elfman.
Gets nominated all the time. He never wins because Williams always wins.
Danny Elfman?
No, not Danny. Danny Elfman's got some Oscars on his shelf.
Yep.
It'll come to me at some point.
Wasn't there a Barry in there? That's probably a Barry.
Gibb? He wrote all the hits of the 70s.
Yeah. Composers of movies. I'll write that in. We'll see. John Williams. No, I'm Danny Elfman, Rachel Portman, who's that? Oh, Hans Zimmer, of course.
No,
John Barry, that's who I was thinking of.
Yeah, John Barry. Hans Zimmer has done a ton.
Oh, Hans Zimmer's great. Jerry Goldsmith, he died, but he had a whole bunch of them.
Jerry Goldsmith was one
Howard
I was thinking
Short.
Of.
Jerry Goldsmith.
Jerry Goldsmith wrote tons and tons and tons of great movie scores.
Yeah.
You
have any disaster ones then? Let's see. He did Logan's Run, Planet of the Apes. That's kind of a disaster movie.
Giorgio Moroder wrote tons.
Alien?
Wrote tons of... movie soundtracks in the late 70s and early 80s.
Yeah.
And a lot of the Oscar-nominated songs, it was pretty much a thing in the late 70s and early 80s that a Giorgio Moroder song would be nominated for Best Original Song.
Sure.
And I believe he finally won an Oscar with Berlin for a song called Take My Breath Away.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
So that was one of his. His song, The Chase, from the soundtrack of oh, my God, what is the name? I know this movie.
The Chase? What?
Yeah. Kid gets busted for selling drugs overseas. The opening scene is at the airport. What the heck is the name of that movie?
I don't know.
Oh, my God.
This is Jerry Goldsmith?
No.
This is Giorgio Moroder?
Giorgio Moroder.
I don't know. Kid gets busted. He goes overseas for drugs. Giorgio.
Midnight Express.
Oh, yeah. Great movie.
Yeah. The opening scene of that movie where he's standing next to the plane and they all pull the guns out and point him at him. It's like harrowing.
Yeah. Great movie.
And then nothing good happens after that.
No. He gets thrown in Turkish prison.
Yeah.
And then, he's in trouble. And but then he shows his chest to a boy. I remember.
That song, The Chase, is a great little instrumental and one that you have heard more times than you can remember, but you never know what the name of the song is. Mm-hmm. It's called The Chase. If you hear it, you'll know exactly what it is.
I'm going to give you a 6 degrees of Jerry Goldsmith here. 1 degree, he wrote The Omen. That's the horror. The horror link. And also he did Air Force One, which we just talked about with Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did Poltergeist, Alien. He did all kinds of horror movies and stuff. Logan's Run. Mentioned Planet of the Apes. I'm going to give you 2 disasters. This is an early this or that. I'm not going to play the background music, though. So would you rather be on that ship with the tidal wave, or would you rather be on the plane with the bomb?
No. Give me the ship. Give me the ship 100% of the time.
Yeah, I'd take the ship, too, I think.
Yeah, there's only one way you're coming down in that plane.
Yeah.
Safely. Yeah. And a lot of ways you're not coming down in that plane unsafely.
Right,
I'll take my chances in the water.
Yeah, that's the trouble, though. In the water, though, you could be there for a while.
Yeah, but,
You may be, it may be a slow death. You might just want that bomb.
Even the Titanic, if one of those ships nearby had been doing its job correctly, as part of the scandal that unfolded afterward, at that point in time, like 1912, 110 years ago, would have had a rescue ship on site within a matter of minutes.
Yeah.
Today, with everything that's floating around in the oceans, you're going to have somebody there before the ship goes under.
Yeah, I think so, too.
The only time you ever really see, major disaster at sea, loss of life, is when a ferry tips over in rough waters off the coast of somewhere and immediately goes to the bottom of the ocean because it's full of cars.
Sure.
Stay off of the ferry with the cars.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's pretty rare to have, major ocean liner disasters.
They were way up there, though. They were up in, Greenland, I think.
Yeah.
When they hit the iceberg. But then there's also that drunk guy from Italy that, put an ocean liner sideways.
Yeah.
Which is pretty awesome.
And then tried to leave the ship.
And then they can't open the shipping lanes for, weeks, and everybody's losing money. Yeah. Well, that guy...
But then, to him.
You're missing
the other big one, which is up in the tall building, and something bad is going on beneath you.
Well, I was going to give that as a this or that too, because that brings us to the Towering Inferno. All right, that's a gigantic office building, right? And it has a fire in it. The fires. I mean, and we're getting into 9/11 territory. 20-30 years earlier.
Yeah,
you won't see a movie like this anymore. No.
No.
And they did do they did the Oliver Stone World Trade Center, but it was basically about 9/11. The thing they're not going to see is entertainment, a disaster movie about a burning building. We're not going to see it ever again.
They weren't up in the building. Again. They were under it.
In the Towering Inferno?
Yeah.
Okay.
No. In Oliver Stone's 9/11. They were trying to get out from under the building.
In World Trade Center?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
There's another... Have you seen the 9/11 movie with Charlie Sheen in it?
No.
Ooh, it's bad.
No.
It's bad.
I remember World Trade Center, and I remember United 93, which I thought United 93 was pretty well done.
Yeah, I almost got up and walked out of the theater when that started running. Because I'm sitting there watching the credits roll, and I'm like, I don't know if I'm in the mood for this right now.
Yeah.
The Towering Inferno... I always loved because Bobby Brady's in it.
Bobby Brady, that's right. Yeah, Michael Lookinland or something like that.
And it's
right?
Awkward tween Bobby Brady, who's not cute little Bobby Brady anymore. Mm-hmm. And he's in that awkward sort of in between just hit puberty stage.
Yeah.
And he just seems so out of place in every scene of the movie because you sit there and you're like, why is Bobby Brady here?
Kids got to eat, you know?
Oh, I know.
Got to feed the family.
But that's really the last time you saw a cast member from the Brady Bunch in anything
other than the Brady Bunch. They couldn't get away from it, yeah.
Who else is in that one? Steve McQueen.
Steve McQueen's fantastic.
There's a great argument for William Holden's
fantastic, too. I mean, two macho men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
and Fred Astaire on the side.
Steve McQueen didn't do a lot of stuff like this.
Yeah.
You know, where he was just sort of like...
with an ensemble. He liked to be number one in every movie. He needed to be the main guy.
Paul Newman is in this one.
Yeah.
Fred Astaire dies in this movie.
Yeah.
O.J. Simpson.
I know, O.J.
In an early role.
Yep. He was actually in quite a few movies.
Yeah.
Also somebody you're not going to see in the movies anymore. No. You're not going to see O.J. in anything anymore, that's for sure.
No, when they do the airplane reboot.
No more Orenthal James Simpson. That's it. The juice ain't loose anymore.
The juice ain't loose.
No, he's all done.
Dabney Coleman.
Oh, I love Dabney Coleman.
Has a small role in this.
He like disappeared and then he came back in Boardwalk Empire and he was just fantastic in it.
Yeah. Richard Chamberlain.
Yeah, another one of these ensemble casts and also nominated for Best Picture. Highest grossing film in 1974. So this is really, you know, when Hollywood took a notice and they're like, yeah, these things are making money. Let's make more and more disaster movies.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, with the horror budgets, everything's usually, you know, low budget. But in this case, you know, they actually did some high budget, very entertaining Hollywood movies. A budget of $14 million, it made $203 million.
There's a sort of the formula of the disaster movie and the formula of the horror movie aren't that different.
Mm-hmm.
The main difference between them is that somewhere along the line, there's going to be a massive set piece where the disaster is happening.
Sure.
And they're going to throw all of their money into that one set piece.
Yeah.
After that, it becomes very much like a horror movie where people are going to die. You know who's going to die. You know who's going to live. And you're waiting to see how they die.
Right.
Are they going to fall down the elevator shaft? Is something going to land on them? Are they going to get electrocuted?
Yeah.
Are they going to burn to death? They're going to die.
I knew I was going to see James Cameron's Titanic because after the first trailer, you saw the body just pop off of the propeller and flip backwards. And I'm like, I'm going to see that. That looks great.
I'll give you two great disaster movies that people don't often think about.
Yeah, I was going to throw a couple in there too. Throw one at me. What do you got?
If you're a fan of The Towering Inferno, you have to watch it along and then follow it up with Die Hard.
Die Hard's a good disaster movie. Also, would you consider it a Christmas movie?
It's a Christmas movie.
I think so too.
It's a disaster movie. It's an action movie. It's all of the above.
Yeah, it is a good movie. I rewatched that last year. It is a good movie.
Die Hard follows all of the conventions of the disaster movie, and it borrows a few things from The Towering Inferno.
Mm-hmm.
So those two movies together are actually a great night of entertainment. Watch Towering Inferno, watch Die Hard, you're happy. The other one I'll throw out there that I always thought was criminally underrated is Daybreak.
Yeah, I like Daybreak, the one with Stallone, you mean.
Where they're in the tunnel.
Yeah, I love it. I love Daybreak.
I think it's the Lincoln Tunnel, and it's flooded, and they've got to get out of the tunnel
before
they drown.
The very ending, how they get out of the tunnel, is very stupid.
Stupid.
But the rest of the movie is fantastic.
Yeah.
And the trailer for that, too, is fantastic. And I knew I was going to see it when the main character looks at Stallone and says, "We're not going to get out of here, are we?" And he says, "No." And I'm like, that's a movie I want to see.
Yeah.
I want to see how they get out of this.
Because
when you have one of the biggest action stars saying no, and this was in the 90s now, so he'd been in all of his Rambos, and you know, he's the guy that saves you.
Yeah.
You know, or he kills you if you're the bad guy. And to see somebody, Stallone went through this interesting period. Copland's another one, not a disaster movie, but he plays a loser. He plays a guy that isn't reliable. He's not going to save you.
Yeah.
He's deaf in that one. And it shows him being heroic, but also being kind of a fop. And in Daylight, he also has a couple of little flaws in there, too. And it's a great movie.
Up until
the very ending is very stupid, how they survive.
Yeah, the way they survive makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
But I believe he is a first responder in Daylight who he got fired because he was drinking on the job, or, you know, he'd done something stupid to lose his job.
Right.
And he hated life and hated the world and just wanted everyone to leave him alone. But he happens to be the one guy who can figure out how to survive this thing.
Yeah, he's in upstate New York. It's set in upstate New York, and Stallone's in it. Amy Brenneman is in it, and she was in a couple of movies. I think she showed up with, like, Richard Dreyfuss in another movie, and she was in Judging Amy is probably what she's best known for. She was the other person. And Viggo Mortensen's in it, which is cool. A guy from Lord of the Rings shows up in it. And, they're about to enter Manhattan, and then the tunnel fireball erupts, and then they all get stuck in the tunnel.
Yep.
And, yeah, I forget who Stallone actually plays. He plays, all right, Chief Kit Latoura, a disgraced former U.S. New York City Emergency Medical Services chief.
Yeah.
He tries to save the survivors who are trapped inside the tunnel. They originally wanted Nicolas Cage to play the role, but they felt he was more of a character actor and Stallone was more commercially viable. It actually did okay, I think, at the theater. Yeah, it made twice of its money. It had a budget of $80 million, made $160.
Yeah, it did well in the theater. It did really well on home video.
Yeah.
It was one of those movies that had respectable box office, but then was on cable all the time, was always at the video store. And it's what I like to call a great Saturday afternoon movie. Like, you got nothing going on, you throw that movie on.
Yeah, I agree.
And you could just, like, sit there and watch it and have a good time with it.
Yeah.
It borrows...
Do the dishes.
Yeah.
Yep.
It borrows a lot from Die Hard.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea of Stallone's character is based on John McClane from Die Hard, who's this kind of a loser, you know, first responder who doesn't really want to be here and doesn't really want to be the hero, but has the ability to do it.
Right.
And can survive all of these insane situations that come up.
Yeah. It is a very cool disaster movie. It's definitely worth seeing at least once if you haven't seen that. And probably one of the only Stallone movies that, you know, like you're saying, it's a little bit different. He's actually acting a little bit in this one.
Yeah.
And instead of a straight-out action movie, it's more of a disaster movie. And he didn't have too many of those, I don't think. Another one that was from 70s was Earthquake, 1974.
Yep.
I mean, just an amazing movie. It had an amazing ride at Universal Studios for years and years, where you would go into Universal Studios and the earth literally opened up and water was gushed right towards you. And a subway would break in half with electricity flying right toward you. And it was so cool. And then they reset the set, which was just as interesting to watch when you were done with the ride.
Yeah.
The ride itself was about, I don't know, 10, 12 minutes. And you would just go right up to a rail with everybody else. And you would see, like, you were in kind of a New York subway, I think it is. And you would just sit there and watch the action unfold. It was literally the closest, I think, to being in a movie.
Yeah.
As an audience member or on a ride.
It's yeah. I've seen footage of it. I was never actually on it. I know along with Jaws, it was the highlight of the Universal Studio
yeah,
tour.
Jaws ride's great too, yeah.
And yeah, I've watched it and it's like, holy cow, like what they did to make that thing a ride. So
yeah.
You could just recycle it over and over again all day long.
Yeah.
Because there's fire and there's sparks all over the
place. Oh,
and
you feel it. You feel the sparks and the fire. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You literally have like heat lamps blowing heat at you as the things explode around you.
Yeah.
And the electricity, like the shocking, it was amazing. And to see these thousands of gallons of water like rushing right toward you. And they're coming down from a hill, so they're coming right for
yeah.
you at the rail. And the way they have it set up is there's like a little sewer system underneath the rail that you don't really see while you're standing and looking at it. So when it comes down, it just goes right underneath you and it's gone. But it looks like it's going to like take out everybody at
yeah.
the rail on the ride. And it's just amazing. It was one of the coolest things I think I've ever seen. It was so cool. It was just like being in a big, big movie with special effects.
Earthquake the movie, not so good. Not so good.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
I haven't seen it in so long, I don't remember much of it.
I
know it was a big hit.
Disaster movies kind of evolved from we're going to be on the ship, we're going to be on the plane, to general mayhem,
mm-hmm.
which is where films like Earthquake and Volcano and...
What was that other one with Pierce Brosnan? There was Volcano and there was also Dante's Peak.
Dante's
All
Peak.
All of a sudden there were like volcano
yeah,
movies.
Those
there were
came
like
out
three
at the same
big
time.
Yeah, three big volcano movies one year.
The Swarm is another one. That's a disaster movie.
That's a B movie, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just sort
like
of
like a VB movie.
It's
B-E.
Just sort of just leave, you know, just like go someplace else. And you don't have to stick around and put up with this.
You got Charlton Heston in it though.
Yeah, I know.
Does he hold his gun? Can you pull it from his dead hands?
I think he does hold his gun in that movie.
Yeah. Well, Mario Puzo is also a writer of that, and he did The Godfather, of course.
Yeah.
So everybody was looking forward to 1974's Earthquake.
Mario Puzo wrote a lot of questionable things after he did The Godfather.
Yeah.
Superman was not one of them, but Earthquake definitely was.
Yeah.
And there's some other Mario things that he's attached to that you're like, what? Because everybody wanted him.
You know what's interesting is I was going to just bring up Superman because Mario Puzo wrote at least Superman, parts of Superman too, right?
Yeah.
And there's a great scene in Superman. I think in the original Superman has the best earthquake scene in a movie, I think. When you have Margot Kidder and she's in her car and all of a sudden this crack comes behind the car and she's out of gas, she's in the middle of the desert. And you're like, oh my God, is Superman going to save her? And, of course, if you've seen Superman, he doesn't. And you're like, wait a second, what kind of movie is this? You know, and to see her get buried in the car, and all of a sudden Lois Lane is gone as a seven-year-old boy at his first PG movie, I was devastated. I was like, how can she die?
Yeah.
And to me, that was just frightening as hell to see Lois Lane, like, die. Because I had watched, you know, all the old 50s Supermans with Lois Lane and stuff. So me and my brother got to go see Superman when we were kids in the theater. And it was my first PG movie. I was so looking forward to it. And that part, that scene was heartbreaking to me. And then when he brought her back, I'm like, wow, couldn't believe it.
I think Superman came out in 78, I believe. Yeah, so I was 9 years old when I saw that because it came out late in 1978. I remember that. It was a Christmas movie.
Yes.
I was 9 years old when I saw that, and that scene really got me.
Yeah, because it's frightening as hell.
It is. It's terrible. You heard about earthquakes all the time, and this looked and felt like that scene with her looked and felt like the real thing. You're like, oh, my God, like the earth opens up and swallows and crushes people.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah. And the entire car fills with dirt.
Yeah.
And she's sideways and she's in the crevice and it's like, where's Superman?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is one of the most effective disaster scenes in pretty much any movie that you can think of.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah, so Charlton Heston and also some other players always show up. Like George Kennedy shows up in this one. He's in the airport.
Oh, yeah.
He's in the airport movies.
George Kennedy's hanging around the studio. Yeah. Like, you got a role for me, you got a role for me. Like, George Kennedy's in a room over there. Just put him in this.
And you know what's awesome is they pull him out for Naked Gun with Leslie Nielsen later, too.
Yeah.
And, it's pretty cool. And Victoria Principal shows up. Lauren Green, who had his Alpo commercials back then and also did Bonanza. As Ben Cartwright and Bonanza, and also right before Battlestar Galactica, Lorne Greene.
Indeed.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about Earthquake is that Earthquake had a then revolutionary sound system.
Mm-hmm.
They put giant subwoofers in all of the theaters.
Really?
And during the scenes of the earthquake, they would crank up these subwoofers.
Nice.
And the entire theater would vibrate.
Nice.
You would feel it in your stomach.
Nice.
The theatrical release of Battlestar Galactica also used Sensoround.
Nice.
And I believe Roller Coaster also used Sensoround.
Sensoround.
The bad thing about Sensoround was if you were seeing any other movie in the multiplex, you would know when the disaster scene was happening in
next theater.
Because you heard it everywhere.
Yes, that's
like,
right.
Yeah. The whole theater would be shaking, and you're sitting there trying to listen to dialogue, and you hear this coming out of somewhere.
Yeah, that used to freak me out. You'd be sitting there like watching a cartoon, and then like some disaster movie's playing next door and just completely take over your theater for a few minutes.
But in the days before IMAX, that was the most exciting thing. It was like, oh, we make you feel the earthquake. Oh, how do you do that? We rumble your guts with some really low frequencies from really big speakers.
What was that one that they put in your chair that, what's his name?
The Tingler.
The Tingler, that's right, Tingler.
Yeah.
They put that in your theater seat, and then when something happened, then you got stung in the bum.
Yeah, it gave you a little electric shock.
Yeah.
That's a good time at the movies.
See, that's what the movies needs, you know? you need a little more excitement like that. Like when you had that extra bass, I mean, that was an extra reason to go to the movies with a great sound system. I love having my surround sound.
Oh, yeah.
When you're watching something great, you know, like, you know, a Lord of the Rings or a Star Wars or something, just fantastic. Hearing a snow speeder go around from one ear to the other and back again is just awesome.
Well, if you go see anything in IMAX now, or if you go see something in a Dolby Atmos theater, you're getting the same thing that was Sensoround back in 1974. Because they have the bass cranked up to an absurd level.
Yeah.
So that whenever anything massive is moving around on screen, you feel it because they're pumping all that sound at you.
Yeah.
In 1974, most stereo systems, unless you owned something really high-end, were these tinny little things.
Yeah.
And it was all like high frequency. Like nobody really knew what bass was.
Yeah.
In the early 70s. I know it's hard to imagine that. But bass came along later,
yep.
And surround sound was one of the things that made bass what it is.
Nice. I'm going to give you the top 10 disaster movies that are on there on the Google search, and you're going to be like, what? You ready?
Sure.
I think this is because, you know, the people responding are like under 20. The popular disaster movies that are coming up. All right, Armageddon. I hated it. Did you like Armageddon? The asteroids coming to destroy Earth. Ben Affleck's like trying to make out with Liv Tyler. Aerosmith plays a ballad, and Bruce Willis, you know, is on an asteroid with what's his name? I think is Keith David in it. I think Keith David shows up.
Everybody's in it because that's the one where they got Steve Buscemi and, you know, all the rest of them showing up. And is that one? No. I'm thinking of Con Air.
No, this is Armageddon when they, okay, it's sci-fi, but
Steve
it's
Buscemi's in Armageddon, disaster. Isn't he?
Yeah, he shows up in Armageddon. Yeah. It's Jerry Bruckheimer. It's another big one. Made $553 million with a budget of $140.
It's a Michael Bay film, if my memory serves correctly.
J.J. Abrams did the screenplay back when he actually wrote things with a beginning, a middle, and an end.
And I will always think of Michael Bay as the guy who had the idea to put stuntmen in the foreground and have them jump out of the way when the car comes or something explodes. That's pretty much his main contribution to cinema. And
he also did the remakes of Amityville Horror and Texas Chainsaw and Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street. He did all of those. Well, the remake of the horror movies, his Platinum Dunes, his production company
financed them.
Yes.
Armageddon is kind of fun, but it's horribly, horribly dated.
Yeah, I hated it. I never liked it. I saw it in the theater and I didn't like it. I'm like, oh, that was crap.
Like, do you really want Ben Affleck as romantic lead?
Honestly, I don't want Ben Affleck in anything. I never liked him.
But just, well, I'm not going to badmouth Ben Affleck.
I am. I hate him. I think he sucks.
Well, I was in a movie with him, so I can't.
Well, he gave Harvey Weinstein a little, and he got a career out of it.
He's not that bad.
Yep.
But Ben Affleck as romantic lead doesn't...
I like Matt Damon, not Ben Affleck.
Doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. And that whole... All the nonsense at the end of that movie doesn't work.
Liv Tyler I would watch for 2 hours doing nothing. If she was just looking at a flower, I would watch her.
I'd watch Liv Tyler for like 2 minutes. I can think of more interesting people to watch.
Come on. She's beautiful.
She's beautiful, but there's not much there.
Yeah. All right. This or that. In the Room for an Hour with Steve Buscemi or In the Room for an Hour with Ben Affleck? Which one and why?
Oh, Steve Buscemi all day long.
Yeah. Interesting man.
Yeah. He's going to give you some great firefighter stories and you're probably going to get drunk.
Yeah.
Ben Affleck's going to spend the whole time trying to sell you crypto.
Yeah. Peter Stormare or Michael Clark Duncan? They're also in Armageddon. Who would you want? You know who both of them are?
I'd probably go with Michael Clark Duncan.
Yeah. Peter Stormare's the guy that was also in Fargo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Michael Clark Duncan pops up in all kinds of B-movies.
Well, he's dead now.
But he used to pop up in all kinds of B-movies.
He was great.
Is it a choice between Stormare and the corpse of Michael Clark Duncan? Because I don't want to be in the thing with a dead guy.
They're both pretty intimidating men.
Yeah, big dudes.
I think Michael Clark Duncan is a little more welcoming. He's got that big smile.
Yeah.
You know, the Green Mile. That was pretty good.
He was great in the Green Mile.
Yeah. Yeah, that was his movie. He died too early, I thought. He died at 54.
Yeah.
We still got Peter Stormare, though. We're lucky. He's pretty good.
So we got Armageddon. What else is...
Yeah, Armageddon's number one.
Armageddon is not number one.
No, that's what's on
like
here
by
for,
any reasonable
for
measure,
disaster movies.
By
yeah.
any reasonable measure, Titanic is the number one disaster movie of all time. And if you're picking Armageddon, you're a 90s kid loser.
I would say, Titanic's the number one disaster movie. I'd say it's a romantic disaster movie. It's more of a romance than a disaster movie.
But it's
movie,
a disaster movie. It's,
yeah,
it's,
it sure
it's
is.
Built around, there's a romance there, but it's built around a disaster movie.
Yeah, you're right. Twister. We haven't talked about Twister yet. I love it. You didn't like Twister? You kidding me?
I liked it.
Helen Hunt, Bill Paxton, Van Halen does the soundtrack.
Listen, I'm a Helen Hunt fan. Yeah. Helen Hunt is in one of my favorite disaster movies, which is Roller Coaster.
Roller Coaster. That's right. She's super young in that.
She's
right?
A very young Helen Hunt is the daughter in Jeopardy in
Come
Roller
on.
Coaster.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's going deep.
And I've seen Helen Hunt live on stage doing Working. So,
really?
Yeah.
Doing what?
Working, the musical.
I don't know that one.
I like Helen Hunt. She's great.
Lalo Schifrin did Roller Coaster.
Yes. Fun movie.
Scary movie. I remember seeing that as a kid. And my brother, that scared the hell out of me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why it's got a mad bomber is blowing up roller coasters at amusement parks around California.
I got in the background. Wow, what a great school. Listen to that. Brings you right there.
Yeah, that's a fun, fun movie. I liked Twister when it came out. And as the years have gone by, my patience with it has just worn out.
Yeah.
Because
I almost want to talk about a roller coaster for a minute before Twister.
It's a film that winds up turning its characters into parodies of themselves.
Yeah, but you know, the Twister, it's not about Helen Hunt and Bill Paxton. It's about the Twister. It's right in the title.
Yeah, I know, but it gets grating, and there really isn't enough tornado action.
You got a flying cow.
There really isn't enough tornado action.
You got
in
a tractor tire. This is what sold me on that one. In the trailer, the tractor tire comes right for the screen and just whacks you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that would have been great in 3D. Twister in 3D.
Yeah, I was before that whole thing happened. So, you know, you got to see it in 2D. I'm surprised they haven't done a 3D re-release of it.
Yeah. Well, I think it would be a great 3D movie.
That's far more deserving than Dawn of the Dead, if you're going to do a 3D remaster.
I have to tell you this. I was at Universal for the rides there, and they had a Twister ride. But when I went on the Twister ride in 96, thought it was awesome. I went back in, I think it was 2016, to the Twister ride. They still had TVs with VCRs on top in the line while you were waiting, with intros from Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt talking about what you were going to go in for. And
sure.
I'm like, why do they still have these old, antiquated VHS?
It's a period film.
TVs.
Though.
It wasn't even monitors. It was an actual, like, those old full TV and VHS little boxes that they sold at Toys R Us, you know, for a few years there. I'm like, wow.
That's a period film now. With regard to both of those movies, if I'm flipping around the channels and they show up, I'm looking for something else to watch.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I'd watch Roller Coaster or Twister if they were on.
Oh, no, I'm talking about Twister or Armageddon.
Armageddon, I wouldn't. Well, you know what? Armageddon would suck me in. I'd watch a little bit of it, and then I'd be like, what am I doing? I have trash to take out.
I've had it come on, and then Aerosmith starts playing, and the filters get funky, and the camera starts moving around, and I'm like, nope, I'm going to go.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, man. You know, I did like, I don't want to miss a thing, but it got so annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I might give Twister a hot minute, depending on where it is in the movie.
Oh, it's great.
But it's, it's not.
Twister's great.
It's not.
You kidding me? You got Philip Seymour Hoffman in. Alan Ruck shows up.
Everything bad.
Jamie Gertz.
Everything.
Come on, she was in Lost Boys.
But understand, everything bad that happened in the depiction of scientists and researchers in movies after Twister happened because of Twister.
Yeah. Cary Elwes shows up, the guy in The Princess Bride everybody loves.
They all have to be like...
A masked Avenger.
They all have to be quirky and dress funny and have witty banter, and it really grates on me.
Young Jeremy Davies is in that, who I always love. He was in Lost. You know, Jeremy Davies plays quirky very well.
Yeah, I know. The film is a singularity, and it's a singularity I despise.
I love it. A young Jo Thornton and her family take shelter from a massive F5 tornado that closes in. And then Joe's father attempts to hold down the shelter, but he gets sucked into the Twister and killed. And then young Joe becomes a Twister hunter.
Right, spawning her lifelong quest for revenge against the tornado.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a shark. You can't do that.
Michael Crichton. He was, right? And Kathleen Kennedy, one of the first things she produced. Well, she produced a bunch of stuff.
Michael Crichton was an advisor on that script.
Yeah. Still, it's great.
Yeah, it's
I love it.
No.
$88 million budget, made $500 million. So another disaster movie made a ton of money.
Yeah.
This one made a ton of money.
That was the must see. When it 92?
Yeah.
That was the...
No, 96.
96.
Yeah.
That was the must-see film of the summer of 1996.
Yeah, it was. I brought my brother George out. It was one of the first ones. It was like in May. It came out May 10th. Yeah,
Memorial Day opening, and everybody was like, you're going to see Twister.
And he saw it, and he's like, that was great. Yeah. We looked at each other. We're like, what a great movie. I immediately bought it on Laserdisc when it came out.
I bought it
CAV version, too, not CLV. CAV.
I had it on Laserdisc. I had it on DVD. And
I still have it.
And then one day I was watching it, and I was like, I can't do this
anymore. I might watch it tonight when I go home.
I can't do this.
Since we're not going out to dinner, I got some free time. I might watch Twister.
I can't pretend that I want to watch it. Well, it's not. We're not going out to dinner for a reason, which sucks, but...
Yeah. That's all right.
Yeah. I have...
I can watch Twister.
I have other things clawing at my time, as has been the case lately.
So, Roller Coaster. Another one. Let's talk two disasters. They'd rather get stuck in a Twister or a roller coaster disaster. Well, they're two completely different ones. Let's think. All right, so roller coaster disaster. You got to go wooden roller coaster because those things go flying off the rails all the time.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they do.
No, they don't.
The rickety wooden roller coaster. Sure, they do. Oh, yeah, there's some dumb engineers out there.
There's
plenty of dumb engineers.
That hasn't happened in decades. Roller coaster is one of the safest things you can be on.
Yeah. Nah, last weekend there was probably a few people that died from roller coasters.
No.
Probably.
No.
You go over to, like, Russia or Germany or something, they have these old roller coasters from, like, 1912 that's still running.
Even there, it is insanely rare for someone to be killed on a roller coaster. Yeah. You're more likely to die on one of those drop towers.
So you'd rather be on a roller coaster that goes off the rails versus a Twister coming right for your house?
No, I don't want to be on that. Give me the Twister, because I can walk away and wait for the tornado to blow
by. Not fast
enough. Sometimes you can.
Well, in the movie Twister, you just got to get Helen Hunt, and you just get a nice big belt.
Yeah.
So you could wrap up, like, the boy and Molly and all wrap together, and you guys would be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go sit in the car and see where you land. I drive a Ford Fiesta, so I might get some good distance off of that.
You got some good places to hide, though. You do, like, go inside the Cedar box and go in the Cedar box, so you can, like, link up to the swing set.
You're supposed to go sit in the bathtub during the Twister.
Yeah.
That's what they tell you. Go sit in the bathtub.
No, because, you know, the water could come in. Next thing you know, you got a tidal wave coming in your house.
Not in the plains. Maybe around here, the plumbing
might break.
Yeah, but you're not going to have that much water coming in.
I don't know. See, the thing with the roller coaster, though, I mean, what a ride, though. If you live, you got a story for the rest of your life.
You survive the Twister, you got a story for the rest of your life.
Yeah, but people love roller coasters. People don't love Twisters. You know, people love a roller coaster. Good roller coaster, you go down to Six Flags. I mean, what do you go on? You go on the roller coasters.
Oh, of course.
That's the price of admission.
Yeah.
It's like it cost me $72. I got on a roller coaster twice, and it's fine.
Yeah.
It's worth it.
That's what you're there for.
The 13 deadliest roller coaster accidents. I'm going to give you, this is real horror right here. After an hour of standing in line, you finally get your seat on the amusement park's most awe-inspiring roller coaster. You go up the rail and climb into the clouds. Your heartbeat doubles. The car creeps up ahead until you top out at 310 feet and there's a near vertical drop.
Nice.
It's a bad time to wonder, is this thing safe? But everybody does, right? And what they're saying is the answer is usually yes. Roller coasters are pretty good, but
that's part
things
of,
do happen.
That's part of the illusion of the whole thing.
Things do happen. The Big Dipper at Battersea Park in 1972 in London, England, the scene of what was widely considered the worst roller coaster disaster in history. The Big Dipper was a three-car wooden roller coaster built in 1951 as the main attraction for the park's new fun fair. And hugely popular, comparable to today's London Eye that they have. In 1951, an empty car derailed and knocked over a protective railing, standing passengers in the other car. The disaster struck again in 68 when another crash gave a woman a broken arm. But the worst accident occurred in 1972. 31 people climbed aboard, and as the lift chain prematurely released at the top of the first incline, the cars plummeted backwards down the hill and into a turn, and the train derailed, killed 5 children and injured 13 others.
Yep.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. The odds of dying on a roller coaster are very low. 1 in 750 million.
Better than your odds on an airplane, I believe.
Yeah. The theme park that had the most deaths? Guess. We talked about it the last few weeks.
Action Park?
That's correct. Known as the most dangerous theme park, many serious injuries happened there. 6 people died.